It's all about fear and lack and a belief that you are taking something from me, that you could even take, that it's even possible for you to take something from me, or that I need to have something you have, as though that's even necessary. Do you know what I mean? We get ourselves angry, we get ourselves confused, we get ourselves locked into fear, we get ourselves locked into anger, because we really believe that it's you are doing something to me, and that is why I need to go to war with you.
Yes.
Well, if I knew that my peace of mind and my well-being was actually internal, you couldn't take that from me. We could literally have peace on earth.
In this, the first episode of 2021, I chat with Angela Hardy about freeing yourself from the voice in your head, overcoming trauma and finding solid self-acceptance, as well as how much of our experience of life is all an hallucination. Angela is a personal transformation specialist. For more than 10 years, she's been taking people on journeys of self-mastery, showing them how to love themselves unconditionally and to cultivate self-esteem, self-worth, and self-acceptance, and to find joy, freedom, and peace in this unpredictable world. If you'd like to contact Angela, all of her contact details and social links can be found in the show notes. Enjoy.
It all started way back in my early 20s. I'd come out of school and I'd finished varsity, and the guy that I was working with said to me, I really would love you to do this personal transformation course. And I said, oh, okay. And I went and I did this personal transformation course, and it was really interesting to me because for the very first time in my life, I realized it didn't have to be like this. And the like this that I'd experienced was quite monumental in my mind. You know what I mean? It wasn't such a very, very big deal. But in my own mind, there was a sense of myself that felt like I needed to prove all the time. Life was really, really hard. I was striving upstream all the time. All work was work, 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 work. I was very, very defensive. I was very aggressive. I was very sensitive to criticism. I had all of this stuff going on for me. I was very defensive about stuff. I realized, particularly I remember in that course realizing, geez, where does this defensiveness come from? And do I need it anymore? Do you know what I mean? Is it serving a purpose? Is there value for this thing anymore? And I realized that in my childhood, my older brother had been quite bullying sometimes, and it wasn't necessary anymore. Now that I was in my 20s, I didn't live with him. But still, there was all of this stuff inside of me. And all of the way that I did life was through this. And so as a result of that, I developed this really, really deep interest in personal transformation, personal development stuff. And to be perfectly honest, I spent probably the next 20 years reading everything I could read, doing all the exercises and all the work I could do. And I did have small gains along the way, and I did find that I improved along the way. But ultimately, what I found more than anything else was that despite all of this reading, despite all of this work, I was severely misdirected. And that misdirection had to do with the underlying belief that there was something that actually was fundamentally wrong with me as a human being, and that I had to change something and be something other than what I was, be more, be different, be better, before I would be okay. And I think that, I mean, I know that I heard many, many times that that wasn't true, but the bulk of the work and the understanding that I did was really all about how to become a better person, how to become richer, how to become more successful, how to become nicer, how to become less aggressive, how to become. And then I was running a spa, and I did reflexology, and I did Reiki, and I did massage, and I did all sorts of personal hands-on treatment. And obviously, while I was doing all this work on myself, I was gaining this massive body of knowledge, and I was using it with my clients, and we were talking about this kind of thing, and it was definitely my passion, my interest. How does one go about changing this mind, this mechanism that is controlling this experience that doesn't necessarily feel good? Because I wanted what everybody wants, and that is that sense in myself that felt good. And then at some point, I went actually to visit the cousin of a friend of mine in Nature's Valley. And we arrived there by airplane. We went for a walk on the beach, and my lower back was really, really sore. And I was hobbling along as we walked on the beach together. And we went back to the house, and I said to her, oh, yeah, my back's so sore. And she said, well, let me give you a quick touch for health treatment. And touch for health is kind of a layman's version of kinesiology. And she had been studying kinesiology and Tantra health and all of that for years, kind of in dribs and drabs. And she's now a qualified kinesiologist and actually a medical doctor at the same time. So she's come a long way in her studies. But she fixed my back like that. It was not 10 minutes, and it was the weirdest experiment because a little push here and a little rub there and a little tweak here and test, test, test. And next thing, my back was absolutely fine. And I said to her, that's amazing. I've been looking for something to study for the last 5 years because I love to learn. It's my favorite thing is to get new knowledge, to increase my powers, you know. How, you know, what is this? And she told me about it, and she promptly got onto her computer and booked my first course for me. And so as I started to study the kinesiology, I had this amazing experience because instead of just working with myself on myself, I started working with other people on myself. Because, of course, there's a lot of practical stuff that you have to do and a lot of trading of treatments and whatnot. So you're always working, working, working. And I studied for 4.5 years. So I did a lot of work on myself during that period. And I started to have quite some wonderful insights about this whole transformation journey and who I was. And that was like a really big step up in my growth. And then a few years later, I was working with a woman who actually taught NLP. Her name is Chris Kennedy, and she does NLP training. And she said to me, Ange, I'm loving your kinesiology. This is amazing for me. You need to come on my NLP training. And so I promptly joined her NLP training, and that's how I started to get into the coaching aspect of the transformation aspect, because kinesiology is actually a healing modality, and I used it as a healing modality previous to that. And while I was on this course, she said, I'm reading this amazing book. It's called Clarity by Jamie Smart. And I was like, okay, you know, when people say read this book, and then the next person said, oh yeah, I got that book. It's really good. And somebody else said, I've got that book. And I'm like, okay, I got to read this book, right? And I started reading this book, and this book is about something called the Three Principles. And the Three Principles is actually an understanding of how does the mind work to create your felt experience. And as I read this book, I thought to myself, oh, I see. I see what this misdirection has been about all this time. I see where my feeling or my lack of good feeling comes from. I see where my emotional reactivity comes from, my lack of resilience comes from. I see now what actually happens to create this experience, where this all originates. So I promptly gave the book to my husband, said, listen to this. He listened and slept and slept and listened and listened and slept. And he's loved it as well, and he started Googling all about the Three Principles, and we came across Michael Neal, who is by far my personal guru, and I find him amazing. And then everything, all of this 25 years of study, all of this learning, all of this stuff fell into place, like just the first domino being pushed over and everything. And I started to have really deep insights about the truth of where well-being comes from, how that good feeling originates, what stops us from getting that good feeling, and how that all happens. And that is how I came to start to develop the process and the procedures that I use that involve the principles and kinesiology and some NLP in actually helping people to find that center for themselves, that place of happiness.
And the clients you see, has, you know, nobody's going to go out looking for a therapist if their life appears okay. So, you know, we only go looking for things if we've been through a crisis. And unfortunately, it takes many crises before we make the move.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's just human nature. It's almost like, well, yeah, it's just a little bit uncomfortable. Let's not do the personal work until it really hurts. Yeah. So, yeah, it is unfortunate that but what's always been fascinating to me is that we're not taught even a minuscule level of consciousness, not in the Western world anyway, from as children. We're not taught to go inside. We're taught everything's on the outside. Mm-hmm. And what is your opinion when it comes to, I mean, I think that is the bedrock of the place of illness in the Western world, not only physical illness, but the mental hardships we go through, is that we're not taught to self-reflect and realize that the external world is a complete and utter mirror of what's going on in the internal world. Why is this such a... Yeah, what are your thoughts there?
Well, I mean, this is my greatest, you've just touched on the subject of my most Because I really, it's so true. I feel it's so disappointing that we can learn maths and we can learn geography and we can learn biology, but nobody's learned to pay attention to their own ramblings. Nobody notices that it's their mind that creates their experience, because the mind has been pulling this con job on us from the day we were born. Right from the very, very first moment that we became aware that we were alive, our mind said to us, this feeling is generated from the outside. And we knew we were helpless. And so we knew that there was, in that time, when we were helpless, we really needed the love and the attention of the people around us in order to survive. And quite frankly, I think that the biggest problem with our society is that we were, as you said, never taught to be aware that the mind is creating our own experience. I watched the most amazing TED talk the other day, and the guy said that, he said, if you imagine your brain is in this dark skull, it's dark, it has no access to anything except through your nerves, through the nerves of your eyes, through the nerves of your ears. Those are all electric impulses. We are living in what essentially amounts to a controlled hallucination. And what he was saying, which I just love the way he put this, is that the brain is constantly making its best guess about what's going on. It doesn't know. It doesn't actually see what's going on. It sees something, takes that through the light that the eyes are collecting, takes that through the nerves and the message via the nerve, and says, I think that this is that. So today I saw the most amazing WhatsApp. It was a woman sending a message to the mechanic and saying, there's this light come on my dashboard. Can you tell me what it is, please? And it looked like a man bent over taking a shit. And when she said, I don't know what this light means, this man bent over taking a shit means. And when I looked at the picture, truth bob, it looked like a man bent over taking a shit. And I was like, huh. And the mechanic came back and said, ma'am, it's -4 degrees outside. So it was actually a 4, and then the little circle for the degrees was his head, and then the minus was the shit coming out of his butt. And it's exactly that. It's like, as soon as she says man taking shit, my eyes are looking for the picture that represents man taking shit. And this is why it's such a controlled hallucination. The brain's saying, I hear man taking shit. I see picture man taking shit. It looks like man taking shit. It's actually -4 degrees. Yes. So we're constantly making this best guess. We have to watch that in action. If we're not watching it in action, that best guess seems like reality to us.
I find that I can completely relate to that, because over time we start thinking that we're right about so many things, and that what we assume about the world around us is correct based on our map of reality and our experience of life, yet most of it is completely not true. And the worst, I think, for myself, I can only speak for myself, is that we assume to know what's going on in other people's heads too. And they don't even know what's going on in their head. So how do we assume to know anything unless we can really sit down and get the facts from a person? I think that is the source of so much discontent, whether it's in personal relationships or in business relationships with people, that we don't really know what's going on most of the time because we presume too much.
Yeah, and because we are, the nature of the design is that we're negatively biased. We take a guess with negative bias. And then we take a guess with negative bias based on what we're most afraid they're thinking right now, or we're most afraid is going to happen next. Negative bias is essentially that we're born to survive. And in so much as we're born to survive, we need to be observant of risks and of danger. And so our brain pays more attention to pain, fear, danger, risk, anything that is that kind of thing, then it does pay to feeling good, feeling comfortable, feeling happy, feeling okay, feeling whatever. And so the brain is just 20% more inclined to pay attention to that than it is to pay attention to everything else. And a very interesting phenomenon happens as a result of that, which is that we feel fine the whole day, and then something happens, and we process that in a way that makes us feel unsafe or uncomfortable or unhappy, and then we feel like we've had a bad day. But actually, we've had a bad 5 minutes that we've milked for the rest of the day and hasn't been a bad day at all. And so because that's the thing that our brain says, hey, 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 pay attention to this, that's the bit that we notice. And then we look at it with negative bias in that, right? Of what is the meaning to me in terms of negativity, in terms of fear, in terms of survival, in terms of what could go wrong, or am I okay?
Big source of stress. So what is your best advice for so many people out there who feel that they work for the most demanding company, or they have a terrible relationship? And to say to somebody who's really battling in a relationship that most of the problems they're experiencing are directly connected to how they are in the world, where do you start unpacking that with somebody?
So this is the reason why with all of my clients, I start with the teaching. And that teaching is about how the mind actually creates our feeling experience. And part of that teaching is I talk to them about the voice in their head. You know that voice in your head? That voice in your head that talks to you all the damn time and never shuts up? Well, that voice in your head is the most bizarre thing, because have you noticed how that voice in your head talks to you like you're the third person? It says, Nikki, what are you doing? It uses your very name as though it's not in your own very own head. What the hell is that? And so you've constantly got this voice in your head, yabba, 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 yabba. And so one of the things that I do with my clients and that you should be looking at for yourself is, if you were to take that voice out of your head in this moment and put it next to you, like, do you remember that one Austin Powers movie where there was the bad guy and then the mini-me?
Yes. So
this
yes.
is your little mini-me, this chattering voice in your head. And you thought about this voice in your head, so it was like your roommate that lived in a one-room apartment with you. And then you watched what it was up to. You listened to the garbage that it was spewing. You listened to all the fights that it had with people that weren't even in the same room with it. All the arguments and self-justifications and downright aggressive fighting with someone who's not even in the same room.
Yes.
If you could see yourself doing that, we all know we do it, but we don't realize I'm doing that. When I do that, it feels like I'm fighting. That actually doesn't serve me in any way. It's just an epic, epic waste of airtime. Where would I be better spending my airtime? And so I see it. I notice what it is. I know that it's not serving me. I stop it immediately. The voice in your head thinks it's psychic. It's constantly saying to you, no, they're thinking, Nikki. You know, she really doesn't like your shirt right now, Nikki. You know, what your shoes, you shouldn't have worn those shoes now. You know, you look like a spaz, Nikki. And this voice in your head's like, la, 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 about the thing that you most like, oh, I shouldn't have worn these shoes. I can't believe I wore these shoes, you know. And then you feel all of the feelings that come as though you had that actual criticism from there. Oh, I feel less confident. I don't feel beautiful. I feel like a spaz. I feel stupid. Well, no, that was just mini-me giving you a bunch of look. Nothing happened here.
It's not based in reality whatsoever.
No, and
mini-me is this mind reader that is completely, you know. But why do we create this mini-me? I mean, you said it was the negativity bias, but, you know, is this something that's cultivated from our parents? Or do we pick this up as we learn? I mean, a child... canvas, a little kid that's never had any negative experiences seems to just go through life happy-go-lucky until things start happening, and then you just watch the wall come down. And how do we, you know, how do we stay in that place as long as possible, or recultivate it perhaps, of that joy and happiness and mental freedom that we have as children? Yeah, I suppose some people can say, well, it's before the realities of life kick in, but we've established the realities of life are 99% fantasy anyway. So
yeah,
I mean, wouldn't it be incredible to find some time in our day to find that place that did exist in us once upon a time where we could be free of mini-me?
Well, I think that the most, I mean, this is actually essentially the work that I do, is that it's freeing you from that garbage. Because if you were free of that chatter, you would know yourself to be okay. Now, the problem with trying to free you from that chatter is that actually it's not in the nature of design to not have that chatter. The design is yaggity yag, 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 90,000 thoughts a day. Everybody has them. That's the design. So there's no getting to a place where you don't have thoughts. And there's no getting to a place where these thoughts aren't the same thoughts that they were yesterday or the day before, except that the type of thinking that you have and the types of things that you think about are determined by your childhood and your experiences and the meaning you made of those experiences, most importantly, not so much the experience itself per se, but the meaning that you made about who am I, what does it mean about me, what does it mean about my survival, what does it mean about how I get on in the world, what does it mean about my lovability, about how to get love, about how to get attention, what does it mean? And so what we've done is we've taken all of these little experiences and we've added them up and we've added them up and we've made this understanding or misunderstanding that all of our behavior, all of our patterns, all of our thinking are generated from these misunderstandings and these understandings of how life works. And so actually to free yourself and be emotionally free, you've got to do two things. The first is you have to know how much attention and how much attention not to pay to mini me. So it's actually very easy to know this because your body is like an alarm system in its own right. It's a very effective alarm system. It's very, very functional. It alarms when you've got poor quality thinking, whether that thinking is conscious or unconscious, about a subject that makes you feel bad. How do you know? Well, you're feeling bad. So we don't really ignore the bad feeling. We know it's there. So your body's like, here you go. I'll just let you know that there's some stuff going on here. And it makes you feel bad. So right from that moment when you feel bad, you've got this potential to wake up to the fact that there's something going on here for me. Now, most people wake up to the fact that there's something going on because they feel bad. And they think that the something going on is happening outside of themselves. And that's why they feel bad. And so the retraining is to understand that there's actually something going on inside of me. And the only thing that the outside world is doing in this situation is giving me a little nudge and saying, hey, do you want to think about this? If I'm not thinking about the thing that's going on outside of myself, I'm not emotionally affected by it. If I'm thinking about the thing that's going on outside of myself, I'm affected emotionally depending on the thinking that I'm doing about it. This is why two people feel completely differently about the same event. So the very first thing is we have to really deeply start to understand the nature of the mind, how it actually works to create our feeling experience, how much of a hallucination we really are living in. And as we start to really get a deep understanding of that, not just an intellectual understanding of that, but almost a biofeedback chemical loop of that, I understand it, I see it in action, I notice that that's the truth of what's actually going on, not what I thought it was, and I do that a few thousand times, I start to get this understanding, oh, this is how life actually works. I am generating this feeling, even when it seems like it's not me. Mm-hmm. From that place, we have a certain amount of power because all of the stuff that's coming in all the time and we're thinking I've got to protect myself against that person, I've got to defend myself against that insult, I've got to make sure that the world goes according to plan so that I'm not hurt by the things not going according to plan, I've got to do all of the stuff, we start to realize that's garbage. All of that stuff is actually hurting me. I can dump it all. And then the second thing we have to do is we have to start to get back to if I have a behavior or a reactivity or a discomforting, uncomfortable reaction to something, I have to know that the only reason that that's happening is that I generated a misunderstanding about whether I was safe or unsafe or how to go about being there, or some sort of preference about what I think the world should look like, then the world is singularly unobliging and it's going to look like it looks. And so I need to see these things and the misunderstandings and belief systems. You can have some really, really deep insights on your own, but they take a long time. But if you work with somebody, they have the potential to kind of fast track that because they're actually mine are probably quite similar to yours, you know, particularly yes. Talking about self-esteem and self-love. Yes. We have very similar misunderstandings in our culture about how I have to hurt myself to do better and how much perfection I have to do in order to be okay and what constitutes enoughness and all that kind of stuff. And so when we re-understand these things, the moment I re-understand a misunderstanding that has kept me locked into a cycle of behavior that I don't like, I no longer will have that cycle of behavior. So the clients are coming to us with the symptom of the behavior. anger, lack of self-confidence, depression, anxiety, self-esteem issues, lack of focus at work, lack of purpose in life, relationship issues, all of this kind of stuff. But all of these are symptoms. And the reason that they can't solve them themselves is that they keep working on the symptom. It was the misdirection that I had for so many years. I kept working on the symptom. The symptom is irrelevant, except that it's an arrow that says, hey, pay attention. We got something to find down here. There's something that this is resting on.
Yes, it is. If we can start seeing disease or discomfort or an emotion as a sign to look deeper, that just completely reframes our experience of life. That is not somebody else's fault. And if we can go down that road first, that's like you mentioned, your back. We hear these stories so often of people being in incredible pain or suffering with migraines or whatever it is for so many years until somebody says something to them or approaches it differently. And miraculously, this thing disappears. I find this all the time with craniosacral therapy. Best cure for a headache. How it works, I don't know, but I know that it's a lot deeper than just taking a Panado, for example.
Yeah, much deeper. You know, because you're solving the underlying problem, and with cranio, that's your dura membrane getting stuck mostly, and various compounding and impacting of the head bones. So you're actually solving the underlying problem with that kind of thing, and that's what we're looking to do.
So what potential would the human race, and it's a very esoteric question, I'm just wondering the potential of the human race, if we could be conscious of these things early on in life, where could we possibly go later on in life, having been brought up with this mindset, rather than taking a pill to cure something that's we think is external to our consciousness? The possibilities are endless if we could be brought up with that way of thinking rather than thinking it's somebody else's fault or problem.
Well, at the risk of sounding like Miss South Africa, peace on earth. We really would, because what is war about? It's all about fear and lack and a belief that you are taking something from me, that you could even take, that it's even possible for you to take something from me, or that I need to have something you have, as though that's even necessary. Do you know what I mean? We get ourselves angry, we get ourselves confused, we get ourselves locked into fear, we get ourselves locked into anger, because we really believe that it's you are doing something to me, and that is why I need to go to war with you.
Yes.
Well, if I knew that my peace of mind and my well-being was actually internal, you couldn't take that from me. We could literally have peace on earth.
Yes. So another existential question is, it sometimes seems that most of the population of the planet are not ready for this. Never will be, not in this lifetime. There's a small subset of humanity who even ask the question, which I think is really sad. Or maybe I'm just presuming. Maybe this is just in my imagination and it's not true at all. We've got to ask that all the time. Is on a greater level, on a more of a spiritual level, is this the human journey? Is this what we're destined? We're destined to bump our heads until we finally start getting desperate enough to start asking these questions. And is everybody capable of that? Or is it always going to be reserved for just a small part of the human population?
Well, I think that everybody is capable of it, to be honest. And I think that what you were saying much earlier is exactly true. The problem is not that I'm not willing to be happy or that I don't want to solve something. It's that until something bashes me around hard enough, I don't even necessarily realize that there's something to solve or that there is some way of solving it. I mean, I'm sure with you as well as with me, many people come, it's like, I've tried so many things, I don't know how to fix this. And they're very wary of spending their money, you know what I mean? Because no matter how many testimonials that other people say, oh, this was amazing, it's like, I keep trying, and I don't know how to fix this. So I think that it's amazing to see when somebody knows that there's a possibility and when they're willing to take a little time and energy and effort to pursue that possibility, it's actually remarkably easy to solve. It's bizarrely easy to solve.
It is.
Because But the problem is that, I mean, if you think about me and my story, I spent 25 years trying to solve this problem and I worked bloody hard on it. I cannot tell a lie. I was constantly on the job of trying to solve the problem.
Yeah.
But I was misdirected. I didn't understand how. I didn't know who would teach me this thing. I had no idea. And it was frustrating. It was annoying, actually. And then suddenly I got it. And I was like, oh. And let me tell you something, Nikki. This is not new. You and I both know. It's like 2,000 years of mind science in the Buddhist tradition has been talking about this all of this time. The Christian religion talks about it all the time. All of the great religions and spiritual teachings of the world speak about what is within and what is without and where you should be putting your attention. But they tend to be they're difficult to grasp in that format.
Yeah.
They're not a practical, here is how you do this thing in your language.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And, yeah. And that's how I found for me the success of it was that I came across the source that I could learn how to do this thing in my language in an absolutely practical manner, in an absolutely graspable manner, in an absolutely doable manner.
Yes. And yes, that wisdom, this wisdom is it transcends all cultures, all religions, all philosophies, all sciences, quantum science, quantum physics. It's all saying the same thing in the hope that your brain, if it doesn't understand it in this language, it'll get it in that language. Yeah. But the message is very coherent. It's just waiting for the receiver of the message to go, ba-dum, there it is. That's what I've been looking for. For sure.
Yeah. And it's so interesting to see how long it takes and how short it takes, depending on the individual, their previous history, their willingness to let go of old ideas, very important, and how much attention they pay to it, you know what I mean? Because it is a learning, and you do have to take that learning from an intellectual learning to a real grasp of, I see that it happens like this, which means you have to open yourself up to doing things a different way.
Yes, and I think before you see that it works one way, you've got to experience things not working or experience it in a different way. Very often people have said to me, did you have to go through that level of pain before you realize the way that it works? Always, you have to go to the bottom of that pit to realize that there's some stars above your head, because otherwise you're not going to look up if you're not in the pits. It's and I think that's just simply part of the human experience.
Yeah, and as you say, if we were teaching it to the kids, it wouldn't be. We would just say, hey, kiddo, look up, and kids are perfectly willing to look where you're pointing, so they'd look up and they'd say, oh, that's cool. What do I see there?
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, as much as my parents wanted happiness for themselves and me, they did not know this. They did their best with me. They didn't know this.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're sitting in a very unique point in human history where information being as accessible as it is, we're sitting in a very unique place to get more good out there, not just the negative that we see, not just the nonsense that we see in the media and the negativity, but equally as much the solutions, the positive, you know, stuff, that messages that we can get out there. And inviting people to start thinking about life in a different way. So I think the work that you're doing is critical for generations going forward, for people to turn this big tank around that we find ourselves going down the road in. Is it's going to take a lot of people like yourself to pull up the handbrake for a lot of people and go, U-turn. There's a different way of doing life. Really, really important. So briefly, I just wanted to discuss with you kinesiology and muscle testing and innate body wisdom. I mean, you had that experience of this friend who showed you, just with the right intuition and the right understanding of energy, how you can take pain away, and you really can. I've experienced it myself, many people have. What is your experience of kinesiology, and can you put it into words where somebody listening to this could go, wow, I need to experience that for myself?
So kinesiology is, to me, the most amazing. I just love, love, love this modality. It's a healing modality primarily. And the way that it works is that in order to be well, whether you're talking about being physically well, or whether you're talking about being mentally well, whether you are diseased or you're suffering from digestion or your sleep is a problem or your relationships are a problem or whatever it is that's going on for you, in order to return to wellness, you need to have the possibility available to return to wellness, which means that you need to have, firstly, the emotional desire to return to wellness, and secondly, you have to have the building blocks of wellness in place. So let's say, for instance, you break your arm. Your natural immune system function is to repair that break, but unless you have sufficient calcium and all the other minerals and vitamins required in order for that break to heal, that break will never heal. And so you're not even aware of it. When your arm is broken, you just put in a cast and you carry on, and the body takes care of it. That's the nature of the body. But in the background, you've got to have oxygenation, and so your respiratory system must work, and you must have blood flow. So your blood system, and the transportation of oxygen and nutrients must work properly, and you must have sufficient nutrients to transport. And so your digestive system and your take in of nutrients and all that kind of stuff must work. And your lymphatic system must work. This is the whole healing system. It says this is what you must do next. Bring those T cells, build, rebuild. Your lymphatic system must work properly. And your energetic system must work. You must have a fully functioning electromagnetic, auric, energetic field working, because that's just one of the many systems that has to work. And your emotional system must work, because anything going on in your emotional system is going to impact all of these other systems, as well as are all of these other systems going to impact each other. So whereas with allopathic medicine these days, people specialize. They say, oh, I do heart, and this one does ears, and that one does whatever, elbows or whatever it is. The truth is that the body doesn't work like that. The body works as a single organism. Everything must work together in order for healing to take place. And so the purpose of kinesiology is to, we find out what is not working through the muscle test, and then we have all of these hundreds of corrections that we can apply to the body in order to re-stimulate these various systems to bring them back into a balanced equilibrium. And it's from that state of balanced equilibrium that your body heals itself. So muscle testing, for those of you who don't know what it is a very simple, very, very elegant methodology. If you were to hold your arm out in front of you, you'd be using a muscle called anterior deltoid in order to do that. And so you would be isolating one muscle, anterior deltoid, to hold your arm out in front of you. And if I were to push down on your arm lightly, your anterior deltoid should be perfectly strong enough to hold that arm up with no difficulty. But if I were to say something to you or to ask you to think about something that was stressful, the energy that comes from your brain via the nerve to that muscle that asks the muscle to contract is less. So when your brain becomes stressed, it sends less energy to that muscle. And now when I push on your arm while you're thinking about something that is stressful to you, your muscle will not be able to contract to the same degree. And so you will find that you have less tone in that muscle, and that push will cause your arm to go down slightly. When I ask you to think about something that makes you happy, your brain's back online, everything is groovy, energy via the muscle, no problem, muscle can contract with no difficulty, and you'll be able to hold strong. And so now with kinesiology, we're able to make use of this thing to access all of the things in the unconscious mind, all of your emotional systems, all of your structure, all of your bones, all of your nerves, all of your nutrition, all of your environmental stuff, all of the spiritual stuff that's going on for you, because if that's not in balance, in place, and working correctly in your body, that will be a stressor for you when I challenge it. And so the body tells me very clearly, this issue is a stressor for me. So let's say that you were struggling with, I'll give you a case of a very quick client study thing that happened. This woman comes to me for kinesiology quite regularly. We talk about her life, her emotional stuff. That's mostly what we deal with. But at the end of the session, she says to me, oh, by the way, I slipped in the bath. I've really hurt my knee. I've been doing physio for 6 weeks, but it hasn't come right. Do you think you can help me? So I'm like, okay, well, you know what, I'll just do this one correction that may or may not do the deed. We're not even going to test for it. I'm just going to do this one correction, and let's see what happens. And the correction is essentially simplicity itself. You're holding the bones, you're pushing the bones together against the joint in the direction that they should normally sit. So if you would straighten the leg, push the thigh bone down to the calf bone together and hold them together for 3 minutes. She stood up from the bed. The knee of the pain was gone completely and it stayed away. Now, this is not a correction that's going to help all knee pain, right? But in this particular occasion, I chose this correction because when you slip in the bath, your knee goes slightly out of position. What happens there is it's sending a message to the brain and saying, hey, brain, this is dangerous. I could lose my knee to this. So send back a message of pain. That's where the pain comes from. The brain says, okay, message of pain at the knee. Bam, 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 pain, 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 pain. Theoretically, it would reset and say, oh, okay, I didn't actually chop my knee in half. All is well. I'm fine. But in this particular case, there wasn't the reset that sent the message back to the brain that said, this joint is back in position. No harm done. So that particular correction is all about just putting the joint back in position, hard and, well, firmly enough against itself. So the message goes via the nerve to the brain to say to the brain, we're actually back in position. There's nothing to worry about. No need to send a pain message.
Stop sending the message, yes.
Sending the message, the pain goes away instantaneously. The leg is actually fine. There was never any injury to the leg. And that's why the pain goes away.
So makes perfect sense.
It's some very, very simple one single correction that was helpful for her in that state. Normally in a kinesiology session we'll do whatever corrections come up as needed. So we're looking at all of the aspects of wellness.
Yeah. After all these years of being involved with healing and NLP and psychoneuroimmunology, I'm still the biggest skeptic. For myself, not everybody else. So, yeah. I mean, yesterday I had a great experience with an allopathic doctor who has Eastern medicine training, who does kinesiology. Old friend being, I've seen him since I was a child, very, very knowledgeable, but he's got a good balance of, it's not all woo-woo, you know, but he's got a good balance of energy medicine as well. So it's a really interesting combination. And he asked me to take off my Garmin, my smartwatch, and he did a muscle test and it was fine. I was like, well, now what? Then he said, put the watch back on. And hold my hand up. I was stunned. And he said, this thing's draining your energy. And I can't deny it. There are so many things in our lives that are clearly sucking the life out of us. Ironically, the things that we use that we think are helping our health because it's tracking your sleep and it's managing your steps. We don't need these things to know that we're feeling well or not feeling well. Yeah. So, yeah, I have to, you know, I'm just the biggest skeptic, but every time I just go, oh, yes, just a reminder that there's something out there that's so much bigger than us. You know, we've got to take credence of these things. So, yes, again, I think the work that you do is critically important. And, yeah, I think it's you know, when the super specialists and the super generalists and the allopathic doctors and the healers can all come together and not feel threatened by each other and work together for the greater good, I think we're going to see a lot more healing happening on this planet, especially in a time like this when everything's been blown out the water and we've been asked to reassess what we really think health and well-being is all about. So thank you so much for your contribution to the energy of healing, of helping us all to reach another level of understanding.
Well, thank you for that. I mean, I do it because I'm so passionately interested about it, and so it makes my life a sweet pleasure every day because I'm doing the thing that's most interesting to me and most exciting to me every day. But it is a beautiful journey to walk with somebody. Do you know what I mean?
Very much so.
To be that guide. It's beautiful to be that guide that just walks with him. Come along, let me just show you the path.
And let me show you what I had to learn. And together we can help each other. Yeah, it's very important.
So beautiful. Thank you, Nikki. It was a sweet pleasure talking to you.
Thank you for joining me again for another great conversation. If you're enjoying the show, please rate and review on Apple Podcast. And if you have any questions for further topics, please feel free to email me at podcast@reinventhealth.co.za or leave a voice message on our Anchor FM page. This episode was sponsored by the Nutrition Prescription by Reinvent Health. The one thing we all have a degree of control over is how we manage our health through the choices we make. Believe it or not, healthy nutrition is more simple than we've been led to believe when you know what to do. If you're going to get away with anything positive out of 2020, let it be a wake-up call to make a change. Use this time in the best way possible. Give your body what it truly needs in order to thrive. No matter your age, income level, or health state, you can learn new habits that will help you feel stronger, more energized, and motivated to live better. The Nutrition Prescription is an online learning program designed for anyone wanting to learn the basics of healthy nutrition and customize the knowledge into a way of life that does not involve restrictive dieting. Once you've signed on, you will receive access to hours of videos, meal plans, recipes, articles, and regular webinars that will keep you up to date with the most current thinking around health and nutrition. To sign up or find out more, go to reinventhealth.co.za and click on online learning.